Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Pixels. I say back because we've been away for I think about a month after E3, after doing like, I don't know, five 2-hour shows with Scott Johnson. It was more than I could bear and I had to go away for about a month. If you haven't listened to the entire commentary of all of our comments, you can get that on his RSS feed for Booksel, I was going to say, for Boop. But here, it was just the summary, which was frankly the best part. And we're going to have another best part today with my very good friend, whom I haven't podcasted one-on-one in a very long time, Mark Turpin. How's it going,
It's been far too long, Patrick. I'd like to think that, you know, we have a passionate history, and it's one which I'm just so excited to revisit and to just have a kind of just reconjure some of those original moments.
I agree, but you've had a baby, and I think it's customary to wait a little while before we rekindle our passion. I think it's good. We've had a few months apart, and our reuniting is only stronger because of it. There is, you know, it conjures memories of Movie Deliciousness, for those who know what that show was. And Nicole isn't here, but she's busy being pregnant as well.
Again. Crazy.
She can't stop. It's like, what, the second time? Girl.
Fool me once. Shame on you. can't fool be fooled me. Again.
Well, yeah, exactly. So anyway, Terpser is here for the show. I'm very happy that he's here. And we do the instance almost every week, although we've managed to alternate on that show for the past few weeks.
Yeah, we haven't been on actually for a while together.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening there, but we're here today.
Today, so
let's celebrate good things, let's be happy, and Satoru Iwata died.
That's
a great way to start a show. So for those who don't know, Satoru, I'm guessing by the time this episode comes out in about, a couple of hours, everyone will be aware of this. Satoru Iwata is the president of Nintendo, or was rather, and he has been for, I think, almost 15 years, a little bit less, 13 years, and he was, I'll start with the surprising reaction I had to this, which was basically pretty sad. I thought, I usually don't get affected all that much when famous people die. And for Iwata, it was weird. I woke up this morning a couple of hours ago and it was like, oh, what the? No, not him. He was 55 years old, and he had last year at E3, he couldn't be there because he was undergoing surgery for bile duct cancer, I believe. And he was getting better. He had been away from his duties at the company for a few months, but he had come back. And I think it's a little bit strange the way it affects a lot of people, mostly because of the closeness we felt with the guy because of the Nintendo Directs. I don't know. Did you watch the Nintendo Directs?
No, I didn't really. That's the thing. It's, yeah. For me, I've never been a huge kind of Nintendo fan. But it's never nice to hear, you know, someone right. who was so powerful and you know contributed so much to the industry to be no longer part of it.
Yeah, it's so basically the guy was unlike many of the heads of the industry. He was a real programmer and definitely a real gamer. He used to work at HAL Laboratories. And he was programmer on games like Balloon Fight, Earthbound, Kirby games. He contributed heavily to some of the Pokemon titles. And, you know, we saw reactions from some of the industry leaders in the past few hours, and everyone's floored and not in a good way. He joined Nintendo in 2000, I believe. And when Hiroshi Yamauchi, who was the president of the company since 1949.
Yeah, forever. Yeah.
Retired in 2002, Iwata succeeded to him. So it's been 13 years. And he was he seemed like a super genuine guy. He definitely knew what he was talking about. As I was saying, he was a programmer from the beginning. And he oversaw basically the transition from the Game Boy to the DS, which initially was supposed, I don't know if people will remember, but the Nintendo DS was supposed to be a sort of a side project, which they would do as they were waiting for the next Game Boy to happen. That was sort of the way they communicated on it. It was such a huge success, though, that obviously it became the main.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's funny. Nintendo is, I don't know, it's a very interesting company that I think is quite polarizing, in that they innovate hardware more than anyone else out there, really. They come out with, you know, the DS, the Wii, Wii U not as much, but they're always trying to, you know, see how they can open up gaming to more and more people. But then when it comes to their key franchises, it just feels like we get the same game again and again and again and again, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it can be very frustrating when you think of the potential that those games could have in the hands of other developers.
There is definitely that question, but I think one of the recurring themes that I've had on the show for the past few months is how exquisite the game design is on those games and how masterful they are in the designing of those games. And yes, it is the same game over and over again, but they manage to keep it fresh. And in my mind, at least, you know, the way I look at it is extremely inventive and clever in the way they design games, in which makes those games okay. You know, it's they do come out every, let's say, 4 years with a new version of a classic game they have, which is very different from the approach that we see from the other annualized franchises like the Ubisofts and the Activision and EA's. They put out a new game every year from many of the franchises they own. Nintendo has much more respect for their games and their properties. I remember one of the mentions that Iwata did at a investors call, which was basically, someone was saying, will we ever see merchandising, you know, see Mario's name on cereals or on sneakers or whatever? And he was saying that that was the kind of thing that they wouldn't do because it dilutes the strength of the character and the franchise. So I think there is a love for the medium and for the games they create that you don't necessarily see everywhere. And I was really harsh on Nintendo for their latest E3 conference, which was, I still believe, atrocious.
yeah,
but right, you saw that one. It was terrible, wasn't it?
Well, I like the Muppets. I thought that was
that part was cute. Yeah,
but it's but sad when that's the
highlight of the So right, that was not a good moment for Nintendo, but the company itself and the people that work there and the guy Iwata himself was a genuine love for what they stand for, which is rare in the company. And you know, they're also one of the few old guard in the video game industry. They were there in the 80s, and there aren't that many of those left. You know, Sony, by comparison, is a relatively young entrant in the video game market. They arrived in 94, 95. Microsoft is even later than that. The only other competitor, if I can call them that, to the level of Nintendo is Sega with their consoles, and they've spent the last week apologizing that they've had basically messed up everything they stood for and betrayed the trust that gamers had put in them. So yeah, anyway, I don't think there's a huge
it's just sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's nice to open on a big
on a sad note.
But yeah,
it's, I mean, it's sad. It's, and I think the thing to note is there are a couple of things. First of all, I don't think we would be sad for many of the other CEOs from companies like this. It wouldn't affect us as much, at least me, because Mark apparently doesn't care.
I don't care. I'm quite heartless, though. So I imagine for other people who do care, they care enough for me as well, not caring.
Yeah, you don't have to.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I think it's going to start happening more and more. I mean, Iwata was relatively young. He was 55. But I would say in the next 10, 15 years, the industry is so young that the people that mean something to the industry are still, you know, young and in good health. But that, unfortunately, is not going to last. As we age, the people that created this industry, and that we're starting to see it in the tech industry, but it's going to arrive in the gaming industry as well. People are going to start dying, and it's very sad, but I worry that this is just...
Well, if they do start dying, I think we know where to look first, Patrick. You seem to be making quite a statement that people will start dying.
That kind of reminds me of Batman, and you know, it's something that Scarecrow could say.
Yeah,
people will start dying, Batman.
Dark Knight. Yeah, it'd be good, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Before we move on, I want to talk about Batman, and it will be a much more positive conversation. Although there will be an ugly start.
Okay.
We've heard about the Nintendo NX. Foxconn will start production in October, but the full sale production is going to happen in May or June, which makes a release by 2016 kind of possible. I think that's the target there they have.
So what is the NX, though? Like, what is it?
Well, that's the big question.
Is it just going to be a, you know, Wii U that sells, or how is it going to be?
That would be an impressive feat.
I have a Wii U, and I got given
too.
It. I was very lucky, but I used it maybe once. When I first started using it, I was excited because the second screen, I started like watching YouTube videos on it whilst my wife watched TV, and then I realized my phone's actually better quality than this, and it's easier.
No, so the Wii U, you have to get Nintendo 3D World. Mario 3D World.
Okay.
It's amazing game design-wise. It's mind-blowing. Every level is... I mean, if you have an eye for that kind of thing.
I played Splatoon recently. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was great fun.
I didn't get it. I haven't gotten the game. But, I mean, Mario Kart, I hadn't played Mario Kart in a very long time. This one is really great. So Super Mario 3D World is really cool. There are a bunch of games. But the thing to remember is the expertise. I talk about this all the time, the expertise that they put in this. But getting back to the NX, we don't know what it's going to be. There are rumors about a sort of hybrid portable home console, and that would unify their offering, or maybe offer different experiences if you're at home or not. It's very fuzzy. Obviously, they're not talking. We can expect an unveil at next year's E3 at the latest. So there are a couple of elements there. The thing is, everyone's talking about the failure of the Wii U, and I do talk about it a lot as well, because it has failed. It has finally reached 10 million consoles sold, according to some numbers, to some analysis, which is not a lot for a console that's been out for, 3 years? It's kind of silly. But the thing is, the console that's really at the end of its life cycle is the 3DS. It's a little bit older and it does need a replacement because it's not very the mobile space and the portable space has evolved a lot more. So, but I think it might also have to do with the Wii U, meaning that I'm thinking maybe Nintendo is not going to abandon completely its Wii U fans. Maybe it's going to be compatible somehow, or I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. What is your guess?
They said that it's not a replacement for the 3DS or Wii U, and so I think that by that statement. That statement alone, I imagine it to be a in between, like you're saying, where it is a 3DS and a Wii U sort of thing in terms of that portable home console mix. Because the Wii U is fantastic, but the gamepad is massive and it only works close to the TV. If you look at the PSP, since PlayStation Go kind of came out, all of a sudden that became an amazing console.
PlayStation Go or now?
Now even, sorry. You know, the remote gaming.
Game streaming, yeah.
And so you've got a portable console that plays home console games, which is the dream.
Oh, right, the streaming from the home. Okay, yeah.
And I feel like the Wii U misses out from that. And I think Nintendo have been really unlucky with things like the GameCube and the Wii U, where they kind of fell just too late in the cycle and they didn't innovate enough. They didn't have enough technology in there to be like, well, if you want the best looking game, you might as well go for that console or the best something. With the Wii, they came out and they were like, we're just going to change up how you interface with games. And they sold to everyone. In fact, everyone
played it once.
Yeah, exactly. But they all bought one and they only bought, they came bundled with Wii Sports and they all played tennis and they broke their TVs and then they put it away. And then some people bought the balance board for Wii Fit. And they used it a couple of times, and then that sits underneath the TV, just gathering dust. But they sold them, and that's all that they really need to do. And the Wii U just didn't innovate enough for its cost. If it had come out sooner or had been much better, then I think we would have seen far more sold. But as it stands, I just feel like it was old tech it was a Wii Plus. And you know, people already bought a Wii. So.
Which, by the way, the Wii was a kind of a GameCube anyway. So, I would argue that hardware-wise, the only on home consoles, the only true effective innovation that Nintendo brought was with the GameCube, the GamePad, which had a 3D stick. Right, the mini joystick.
Yeah.
And since then, the Wii was home, it was a Rubik's Cube type phenomenon, but really for gaming, it didn't mean much because it meant a lot, but it didn't. The games weren't actually gamer games, they were sort of casual things that gamers didn't really care about. Same thing with the Wii U, I think it's very clear that this quote unquote innovation was ill conceived. And I would even argue, and that's a little bit more controversial, that in the portable space, very few of the games that are successful because of that dual screen and touch screen. I'm not even talking about the 3D aspect of the 3DS, because I think it's very clear that this is useless to 95% of the audience. But even the two screens from the DS, which was so successful, its success doesn't come. There are great games on that console and there are great games on the 3DS, but those games aren't great because of those hardware features, right? It's not like the 3D thumbstick, where that enables aspects of the game and game design that make it better or that take advantage of it that couldn't exist without it.
Are you telling me that you think that the microphone on the DS, when you played Zelda and you could blow out candles and stuff like that, you're saying that is not as great as the 3D stick? Well, I am blown away, sir.
So I think there are some games, and I'm sure, you know, people in the audience are going to go, oh, but WarioWare was super cool and that couldn't exist without the, you know, touch screen. And yes, I agree. There are some games that are great with that, you know, these hardware things, including maybe some of the blowing in the mic features that Terpster enjoys. But I would argue that these are maybe 10, maybe 15% of the great games. So the majority of the games don't take advantage of this or aren't great because of this. And so the console would have been great regardless because the games are great anyway. So that my point is Nintendo isn't doing as incredible things in the hardware space as people think, but maybe they do need those things to generate some kind of buzz because people think, oh, Nintendo does this, so that console does this, and you can't do it with the others, so it's interesting. But anyway, I guess we'll see what happens with the NX. I'm looking forward to
it. The sad thing is the NX won't be its actual name. They'll come up with some really weird name that everyone will be like, really? And then it'll come out and we'll just accept it, like the Wii.
And the Wii U. Although the Wii U was a disaster in brand
Wii U!
Well, people didn't really understand if it was a different thing from the Wii.
No, exactly. In all fairness, it really wasn't that different from the Wii.
Yeah.
So I think they were just too honest, which just doesn't work.
Yeah. Nintendo X. Yeah. Okay, propose a name for the next Nintendo console.
The Nintendo Extreme.
Oh,
there you go.
Extreme, very 90s. They're trying to recapture the glory of it. Yeah,
and it's because it's going to stream games to you wherever it is.
I love it. Nintendo. I love it.
The 10th iteration, or I don't know. We'll just figure it out.
Xtreme. Love it. All right. Well, rest in peace, Satoru Iwata. And actually, what we didn't talk about is what could happen afterwards. Who is going to take the head of Nintendo? And I'm wondering if Shigeru Miyamoto, legendary designer of Mario games and Zelda games, couldn't take the helm.
You think?
Could. I mean, Reggie Fils-Aimé could also, because he's been there for a long time. He's been doing well in America. But I don't see Nintendo, is a very traditional Japanese company, putting a gaijin at the head of the company.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe
I like the use of the word gaijin as well. That's fantastic.
I have to show how well I speak Japanese. Miyamoto, that would be interesting. I don't know if he would be up.
Yeah, I don't know how good he is at leading companies.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think he's a great spokesperson and figurehead. But I think they just need someone who's going to, get balls deep in there and put Nintendo back in everyone's pocket. I remember when it used to be, have you got a PlayStation or an Xbox? And it'd be like, oh, I've got this or I've got that. But everyone had a DS.
Yeah.
And it's just, it kind of feels like with iOS and Android being so powerful as platforms on our phones, my pocket's taken. So Nintendo have to find a new place to exist. And I think, bringing their games to mobile is probably going to make them more money than any console ever would. But it would be nice to see them do something new that reminds us all why they've been around for so long.
I think there is a way. And if they create something that's cool enough, games-wise...
Bigger pockets.
They're
gonna
exactly.
We have more trousers. Than...
I think we have more than one pocket. So that's my comment.
Okay.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to Batman. And there have been really... terrible news for Batman Arkham Knight on PC, and the port was completely borked. We've heard about this for a while now. Warner Bros. Has apologized profusely. They said that the DLC... they pulled it from Steam, which is almost unheard of.
Exactly. I cannot think of a AAA game getting pulled from retail. And the thing is, for me, I hadn't picked it up, and as soon as that happened, I was like, "Oh man, I want to get this now." So I went to one of the CD keys sites and bought it off of there, much cheaper than Steam. And I've had no issues running it. I modified the config file so that it's not locked to 30 frames and that it's the blur has been disabled because that's what's just so terrible about it. And I have had it crash once, and I've had no issues past that. And I think, it just comes down to how good it should be versus how good it can be and how much you have to, tweak a text file and Google, best PC setup. But I've loved it. I think it's a fantastic game.
So some people have been having issues even, with those tweaks. But everyone I've talked to has been telling me, I don't understand. I've had no problem. But, if they pulled it, it means that it was... bad. But anyway, it will be back hopefully at some point. This has been done to death. I don't know what we can do as consumers to make this better. I think it might be, because obviously it's not the first time that this has happened. And
say, Ubisoft are like, oh, really? Oh, man.
Well, not just them, on consoles as well, there's been terrible things. And, the Master Chief Collection, Drive Club, it's been... And the thing is, even if we don't pre-order those things, I'm thinking each studio has to have their disaster in order to actually physically understand what that is, what happens when that happens, and to make sure that it doesn't happen again. I don't think that as an industry, studios learn from other studios' misfortune. And we've heard that Warner Bros. Knew months in advance that these issues existed. They could have delayed, Rockstar does. They could
so
have delayed
many
the
times
PC.
Already, but yeah.
No, but they could have delayed the PC
version.
But
Grand Theft Auto crashes all the time for me as well. The fact is just that it's such a good game that no one cares.
I
saw Arkham Knight at GDC 2 years ago, and that's when it was meant to be coming out the following year. And I was in a room full of journalists and they were watching it, and they were driving around a Batmobile, really scripted, tight demo that you kind of feel like, okay, they've done this a lot. But it was like watching a PowerPoint presentation. Just the frame drop was unreal. And no one made any comment on it, because I think we all assumed, okay, well, it's not out yet. This is pre-alpha footage or alpha footage, whatever they disclaimed it as. But even then I was thinking, God, they've got some work to do to get it out for next year. And obviously they delayed it. And I thought, well, good on you. Good on you guys, because hopefully that means it's going to be really tight and really hot.
and then this happened.
Not.
Yeah. Well, so what we've heard is that the resources were all focused on the PS4 and Xbox One version, but apparently mostly PS4, which Rocksteady has been having big issues getting up to par. And so the resources, Iron Galaxy is a different company that was handling the port to PC, but they're like 12 people, and they couldn't handle all of it. And but they made sure that the PS4 version was tight, which it is, and the PC version suffered. So anyway, I think the reason why we're not seeing consumer association actions on those issues is that the publishers end up making good on those things, usually offering a good portion of the game's worth in DLC or things like that to the people affected by the issue. And I'm thinking that the reason they pulled it from the store is also that they want to say anyone who has purchased it before that time is going to receive substantial compensation in the form of DLC and stuff like that. That's my guess, but all right, so that's terrible. We'll see what happens then. But the game itself, so spoiler-free, completely spoiler-free.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Don't be like this.
So I haven't even finished it, so don't
Okay,
you
where
dare.
Are you up to?
I don't want to spoil, but...
Have you uncovered the antagonist's identity?
No.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's I'm two-thirds
you probably have,
of the way in,
but
probably.
You don't know it.
Okay. Don't even say that. I'm going to assume that it's... Shut up.
The Arkham Knight's Barbara. She could walk all along.
And so, yeah, no spoilers at all. No. But go ahead. What do you think of the game?
I love it. I've just been so consumed by it. I loved all the previous ones. I even liked Origins. It was made by Warner Brothers East, West. I don't know what they're called.
I think it's Warner Brothers Studios. Is it Canada?
Canada. Sorry. But anyway, I really like that one as well. But I love... The Batman
which is, by the way, usually regarded as the least successful one.
And it's
Warner Brothers Montreal.
Montreal, yeah. And it's one of those. It's just such an amazing world to dive into, and for that world to be as fleshed out as it is, and to have so much kind of hidden story. Just everything is there for a reason. The combat flows just beautifully and feels so organic, and you feel like Batman. That's the thing. Throughout this game, you are the Dark Knight. You are just kicking ass, taking names. I mean, it is hilarious driving around in the Batmobile, running people over. But for the Batmobile, it electrocutes them, you know, tases them before
it's
impact.
It's so silly.
So that in theory, you don't kill anyone. They're dead, I'm telling you. And then equally, when you use your guns, if you kind of try and shoot a gun at a person, it will shoot a riot suppression rubber bullet at them.
When you're in the Batmobile.
Exactly. But once you're on the floor, it switches back to chain gun. And so I'm just like firing guns on these still unconscious bodies and they stay unconscious. But yeah, ultimately, it's just, it's so vast. There's so much to do. The main story is about 35, 40% of the game. The rest is all side quests, of which there's, I'd say, 9 to 10 different threads that you get to be the world's greatest detective through. It's just so much fun.
So I also loved Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. I tell this story very often. I was at home. Sonia was away for like the Christmas period. It was 2011, I guess. And they were both on sale on Steam. And I figured, oh, I've heard about those games. I'll try them out. It was like €5 or something ridiculous. I bought both. And I started playing, and I did not emerge from my man cave for the next 2 weeks. It was just incredible, like the amazing way they design movement and action in the game. For it flows like nothing you've ever played before. Every movement is fluid. Everything is easy. Everything is satisfactory in the way you make that character take those actions in the world. That's the first thing. And you're right, you are the Batman. You feel like such a badass. You have that incredible, super innovative combat system, which makes you feel like you can take on, you know, 30 guys at a time, and it makes sense. You are actually beating each one up individually. It's not like, you know, God of War, where you swipe your giant
two-handed axe, or like
exactly
your glaives of Zeus.
What are the names of the chains,
like,
of Olympus?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
and you know, and everyone is caught in that thing, and there are little sparkles on them when they are hit, and that means they're hit. No, in this game, you actually punch everyone in the face individually. They have, you know, those punches have bad guys' names written on them.
And you've got all your gadgets though as well, like your Batman with your utility belt. You get all of these different tools.
And there's the
gadgets.
The innovation of the detective mode, which is also super cool, that also makes sense for the world of Batman. To be honest, I was not a fan of Batman until I played those games. And that really brought it to me to the forefront of my imagination in the superhero world. But anyway, those games were incredible and acclaimed critically and technically and all of this. The city had a clear path to go to improve upon Asylum, which was Asylum was a more constrained experience. It was very scripted, and well, it wasn't an open world, basically. So the easy way to go was make city an open world, and you're golden if you make it well. And the way it's written, the way it's clever, the way it's funny, made it a success. Origins, let's put it aside, it wasn't Rocksteady that developed it, and usually people agree that it's the least successful of those games, but it's also the most iterative in the sense that it's just another iteration of what City did well. So it was kind of a little bit of more of the same. And going into Arkham Knight, I was very wary. I was hoping I was going to love it, but I was wary of the idea that it was going to be more of the same. And I was wondering if Rocksteady could manage to create a game that would make it more fun with more things to do without making it so complex because of those three past games of history and of you know, legacy that they had, so complex that it would become unwieldy. And how they managed to take on this challenge and pass with not even flying colors. It's like stratospheric colors. It's incredible. The way the gameplay works is improved, you know, without spoiling it, a few minutes in, you get a new armor that gives you different types of capabilities. And through that small trick of storytelling and of gameplay, they managed to put in everything they needed to. It's gameplay-wise, it stays fresh for the entire duration, at least for the two-thirds I've done, and I'm doing a lot of the side quests. For the two-thirds I've done, you almost never do anything similar more than, let's say, 3 or 4 times. Every time you get back to an activity, there's some kind of twist on it that makes it better and not and keeps it fresh and fun.
And they got Lucius Fox in as well in this one, so I like that. Like this sort of like, I'm Morgan Freeman, but I'm not. And it's just like he's just it's so cool to get, like, when you get an upgrade, the Batwing flies out, lands down on top of the Batmobile, like injects the new equipment into you and then flies off again. And it's just like, oh, that's really cool. There's a bit in the story where the Batwing is scanning an island and you actually see in the sky the Batwing zooming around the sky. And that's cool. Like, there's just so much thought goes into this game. And equally, having played all the previous games, you accrue gadgets throughout the game. That's part of the fun of the story. And you then are able to, previously there was that bridge that was electric that you couldn't get over, but now you've got a disruptor so you can turn the electricity off and go over onto the next bit. It's that sort of gating. But what they do is they keep all of those gadgets current to the next game, and you get more gadgets on top of what you previously had. So you pretty much always feel like you are progressing, and having played those other games and unlocked those things, you don't need to unlock them again. And so, I had a grapple booster in Arkham City. So when you grappled up, you could hit space and you would fly up higher. Now the grapple booster, you can upgrade even further to fly even higher to get more air and more speed and get to where you need to go quicker. And it just feels like you can fly around and swoop around the city, and you can fly in this game. It feels amazing. But then you just hold down E and, all of a sudden Batmobile remotely comes underneath your path and you just plomp in and race off, and it's beautiful.
And that's the fluidity of it. You can be anywhere in the city, and press the button to get the Batmobile, and you just zoom into the ground. If you're flying, you zoom to the ground, the Batmobile comes out of nowhere, bursting, like exploding some of the walls if it has to, which is not very Batman-like, but whatever. And you just dive into it, and it slows down right at the right moment, and you get into it and you're like, yeah, I'm Batman. The other thing I want to talk about is the storytelling and the direction. I mean, meaning as you do in movies, directing a movie, this game is directed in an incredible, incredible way. It is storytelling-wise. So the story is kind of silly, as most comic book stories are. But the technically, the way, the camera movements and the way things appear and disappear and play on your mind. And there are some elements of the game that are not explained, but that you are left to experience as the player. Batman talks all the time to give you hints about what you should do, which almost to a level that is annoying. He's like, I should find a way to hit that thing. Probably something like this would work. And you're like, 20 seconds
later, I need to restore power to this area, but the generator's behind that electrified fence. If only I could disrupt her. Electricity. Exactly. So I use my disruptor.
That kind of thing all the time. It's almost to the level where you're like, dude, give me 30 seconds to think about it. Maybe I would have understood this. Yeah. But anyway, so gameplay-wise, it explains a lot. Story-wise, even though the story is silly, it lets you experience some of the things without telling you what it means. And it's, you know, I mean, it has intelligence that bleeds throughout this game. It is an incredible achievement. And I honestly think it's my game of the year, at least so far.
Yeah, easy, easy.
Yeah, right. Even more, some people have been telling me, oh, but The Witcher, you liked it too. And I do like The Witcher. I think this...
It's sad, isn't it? Exactly. But it is. This is better than The Witcher. Witcher's great. Witcher has a lot of repetition that this game doesn't have. You know, Geralt as a hero is fantastic, and the voice acting is vastly improved. But you just it's Batman. I'm sorry, but it's just it's just so cool.
Well,
and even if you don't like Batman, play the game. You will like.
Oh yeah, yeah. Of course. I mean, The Witcher is a great living, breathing world. Kind of. It immerses you in a world that is foreign and that is full of fantasy. I do feel it's a little bit repetitive.
Every time I play it, there'll just be some like really punily armored guard being like, oh, are you a witcher? Or what are you going to do? Use your magic to horrifically kill me? Go on then. And it's just like, well, yeah, I could blink and you could die. Oh, off you go, you witcher. Oh, you stink. So I was like, are you mental? I'm going to kill you now. It's every time.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, and honestly, the quests are, it feels like the quests in The Witcher are go somewhere, put on your Witcher senses, find the red thing, follow it, and then you find someone to kill. And it feels like it's 90% of the quest. But, I mean, The Witcher is a great game. It's more open world, but it was less fantastic than I thought it was going to be, at least for me. And I think it's a matter of preference there. But Batman feels like a theme park where I use that image in my French show where you're being spoon-fed bits of excellence, and you're like, the game is like, oh, hey Patrick, here you'll have a little spoon of combat action, wouldn't you? And you're like, yeah, I yeah, sure, I will. And you have a little spoonful, and you're like, okay, I'm good now. It's getting a little bit boring, and the game is immediately, before it even gets boring, is like, oh, here you go, here's some Batmobile destruction action now. And you're like, oh, I think I will have some Batmobile stuff. And it keeps cycling things so that you're never bored of anything. And everything is more fun not more fun, but as fun as the previous thing. So the Batmobile doesn't work in that world, honestly. I mean, it doesn't work in the Batman. Were saying it kills everything. And conveniently, you know, the drone, the tanks that are invading the city are drones, unmanned drones. And you're like, oh, well, that's awesome. I can destroy them with no remorse then. And, you know, the Riddler had tunnels under the city that fit perfectly for the Batmobile. We don't care. It's a game. It's silly. We know it is. But it works. So, game of the year. Right?
Yeah.
Game of the year.
Game of the year.
All right. Excellent. Batman Arkham Knight, get it. And if you have a PC, once it's fixed, get it. Fallout 4 took the Best of E3 prize. And just so you know, so the Best of E3, the games have to be playable. It can be 2 minutes of a very scripted demo, but it can't be, basically, it can't be a pre-rendered trailer. You have to be able to play it at the game. Best of Show was Fallout 4. Best Original Game, Horizon Zero Dawn. Best Console Game, Uncharted 4. Best Handheld, The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes, which is a little bit surprising. It was poo-pooed during the Nintendo conference. I guess the game itself is probably fun. It's a three-player co-op game. Best PC, Fallout 4. Best Hardware, Oculus Touch, the little controllers for the Oculus. Best Action Game, Star Wars Battlefront. We'll talk about this in a second. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not a Fallout guy. Are you?
I've enjoyed the games. Yeah, it's I've always preferred Elder Scrolls to Fallout, but I'm still excited to have a go on Fallout 4. It's one of those games. It's going to be, as far as I'm aware, it's going to be the same sort of thing as GTA in that it's not going to be playable before it comes out to anyone. So when we get a chance to see it at events and shows and things like that, it will be videos. But once it's out, it's going to be amazing. And I think their reasoning is because it's such a story-driven experience, they don't want that getting leaked beforehand.
Makes sense. It might be... You don't think it's going to be playable at Gamescom, though?
No, no. Okay. Maybe behind closed doors to a select elite. But I think, for the most part, I don't think they're going to be... much like GTA, they just don't want people playing it till it's out.
I see. All right. What about... are you going to Gamescom?
Sadly, I'm not. No, no. Some of our guys are going to be out there. But just purely because I'm at Nerdtacular, the kind of week or so before.
Oh, right, right. I've
used up all my time away from baby.
Understandable. Yeah, I'm not going to be at Gamescom either. It's coming up in a couple of 3 weeks, I guess, 4 weeks.
Yeah, not for long. Yeah.
Biggest consumer gaming show in the world in Germany. 270,000 footfall. It's amazing. And, you know, it's basically the invasion of the sweaty Germans, which I have no intention of being part of this year after maybe 5 years being there. But Microsoft will be there and they're going to be talking about, you know, it's the second portion of the 1-2 punch of E3 and Gamescom. They're going to be talking about games that weren't at E3, like Scalebound, Quantum Break, and Crackdown. So Scalebound is a game from Platinum Games that make Bayonetta. So I'm curious about that game. Super tight action games. That's what they usually do. Quantum Break, it's, I believe, Remedy, which, you know, it's Max Payne back in the 90s, which was amazing. I'm a little bit concerned about the time displacement mechanics from Quantum Break. I'm not sure how it's going to work, but we'll see. And Crackdown, I wasn't part of the Crackdown craze back in the 2000s for the Xbox 360. I didn't get my Xbox 360 straight away. Were you a Crackdown fan?
I wasn't. No. I didn't really, drink that Kool-Aid. But certain fans exist. So I don't want to poo-poo all over it. It's interesting. Just around Gamescom, obviously Sony's pulled out of it. So
yeah,
I think that's really interesting for the biggest show that there is in terms of consumers. That Sony's decided not to attend.
Well, I think they're going to be at the show. They're not going to have a conference. Mm. Aren't they going to be? I'm sure they're going to be at the show.
Well, I don't know. I just heard that they pulled out.
Oh, so, okay.
I don't know. And let me just double check that Sony pulled out.
So what we know is that Sony is going to have a big conference at Paris Games
Week. They're not holding a conference. Okay, right. Well, still.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but they are going to have one at Paris Games Week, but it's too late. I think it's in October. It's too late to do any big announcements. So it's really going to be, well, I mean, it's probably going to be announcements for Q1, but not for Christmas, unless maybe they have a No Man's Sky announcement, but that's, I think we would know the release date before that. So this is really the chance for Microsoft, who by most accounts had a slightly weaker presentation at E3, to amp up their offering. And it's very likely that they're going to, because they have more exclusive games coming down. And Crackdown, you know, with that trailer we saw last year, which had someone blow up a building to make a ramp out of that building to go attack another building, you know, skyscrapers. It was pretty incredible. So I think it could be interesting for sure. However, Microsoft is not going to be at TGS, Tokyo Game Show. And that is, you know, they have to focus on the places where they have some strength left. And Japan, you know, they're selling something ridiculous, like a few hundred consoles a week. I mean, they have never been strong in the Japanese market, but this is just ridiculous. It's just silly. It's their biggest failure in Japan ever. And that's too bad, because they do need the support of Japanese game developers. And it's not like they're not getting it, but not having a big console presence in the country doesn't help. So, that kind of sucks. But anyway, we have Gamescom to look forward to.
There'll be some good stuff to come out of it.
Yeah. And honestly, Scalebound, Platinum Games is that developer that I've been looking at for a long time, thinking that one of those games I have to get into, and Bayonetta didn't quite do it because whatever. But I'm hoping that I got an Xbox One. I didn't mention it. I did get an Xbox One Master Chief Collection. When I'm done with Batman, I'm gonna dive into the Master Chief Collection. Well, I'm super excited.
Are you a fan of Transformers?
Not really, but I heard that the latest one is apparently incredible.
So Transformers Devastation is made by Platinum Games, and that's coming out. Okay. And it's set on the G1, original Transformers, Optimus, Megatron, that lot. So you might like that. It's a kind of accessible world to do some hitting of each other in.
But it's not out yet, right?
No. But again, right. that's going to be one that's coming up.
Yeah. Is it only on Xbox One?
No, I think it's PlayStation exclusive, if anything.
Oh, okay. All right. No, because I mentioned my Xbox One. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. I was just trying to think of what they had coming out. But yeah, Xbox One. So have you enjoyed having one?
I just got it last week, and I've been too engrossed in Batman to play anything else.
Yeah.
I think the UI is kind of confusing, I have to say.
Yeah.
It feels all over the place a little bit. And I was curious why people were so excited about the UI revamp that's coming out by the end of the year. And now I get it. I think the UI is very confusing on the Xbox One. It's basically a consequence of the heritage of them wanting to have everything. The TV and the thing and the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think they need it. So we'll see it if they revamp this. But I haven't had enough time with it to really make a judgment. A little bit confusing, but what matters is what games are going to be on it. And Master Chief Collection, I've never played a Halo game, so I'm looking forward to that. And Tomb Raider, of course, is going to be, my thing.
Cannot wait.
Yeah. And then what else? Sony has said that PlayStation 4 has 70 to 90% of Europe's console market. And that, 70, I can guess, I can believe. 90%, the thing is, the Xbox One started late in many of the markets. The PlayStation 4 was available much sooner in many of the European markets and many of the markets, period. But anyway, it's just one other element that seems to indicate that it's really not a great generation for Microsoft at this stage. 70% dominance. We'll see what happens in the next few years. It's just the beginning. And certainly in the previous generation, Sony had difficulties at the beginning with their incredibly expensive PlayStation 3. And they managed to bridge that gap and come back to roughly 50-50 worldwide. I don't know. We'll see, but Microsoft needs to do better.
Yeah.
I guess. All right. Quicker news. Did you see that full E3 demo for Uncharted 4? The full 15 minutes?
No,
we didn't.
No. Where is this?
Everywhere. What are you doing? Stop having babies.
Sorry. Yeah. Wow.
So we saw publicly about half of that demo at E3. It was about 7 minutes. Basically, it was Drake, Nathan, and Sully barreling down the city downhill up to the train, not the train, the trucks that were escaping, and it was pretty incredible. And it cut when Drake was trying to get on one of those trucks. And that demo shows what happens afterwards. And it's just as, it's the best moments of Uncharted 2 magnified. It's non-stop incredible action. It is what Indiana Jones would be if it was done successfully today. It's amazing action. It makes you feel kind of like Batman. It's very scripted.
It's very cinematic. The Uncharted series I've always loved, in that I haven't felt like I've done a huge amount of gameplay. But again, the unifying thing about these two games is that they use animation blending really, really, really well. And what it means is that the movement on screen is so organic, and it moves and transitions between a walking, running, ducking, hiding, rolling, punching, whatever, really organically. And it feels so much more believable that you just kind of get lost in those worlds and are happy for those stories to unfold in front of you.
I agree. Yeah, it's very passive. Actually, both those games, and even when you are active, it is the right balance between the right kind of quick time event. Basically, everything in most of the, not everything, but a lot of those two games and many others, but those two specifically, is somewhat quick time event-y. Even the fighting in Batman is press the right button at the right time. That's what you have to get into. And in Uncharted, a lot of the set piece action scenes boil down to pressing the right button at the right time. But it immerses you in the action in a way that obviously, you know, people who say quick time events are useless, and when they're badly used, they certainly are. Mm. But what it makes is that try to imagine those same scenes, those same action scenes, without you having to press a button. Then you're just watching the thing. And as much as people want to poo-poo those quick time events, it does change the way you relate to what's happening on screen. So I think that's the best way of explaining that it is a different experience, and it's not just completely passive. So anyway, go watch that those 15 minutes. They're amazing, and I can't wait for that game to come out.
I will do that after this.
18 minutes of the most puzzling game of our time, No Man's Sky. And you've just deleted it.
Sorry, no, you get things back. I was clicking on it.
18 minutes. Honestly, we don't really learn all that much about the game. It's still kind of a mystery. But I think what it comes down to is that there isn't much more than what we think is in that game. It is going to be just a bunch of planets that you go explore, and you can, you know, gather resources, maybe shoot a couple of enemies here and there. And that's kind of it. I do think we now have to adjust our expectations of that game. It's not going to be Skyrim in infinite space, or, you know, this sort of open world quest-based thing. It's just going to be more very passive, not passive, but sandboxy in the sense that you can go and look at stuff. But yeah,
it's cool. I mean, Hello Games, they're a really cool company. They made the Joe Danger series, but they're down in Guildford, which is the kind of the hub of the British games development scene. And I don't know. I mean, I'd be really excited to see what they do. It's so different from what they've done before, but it's procedurally generated planets as well, isn't it?
So, yeah, exactly. It's and it's, you know, millions and millions of planets.
They've said 18 quintillion is what they've gone for. But I imagine there's some that are fairly similar. It'd be really, really interesting to see what they managed to do, because it's still a fairly small team there.
And that's, you know, they're procedurally generating everything, and they have little virtual robots going on to. The thing is, we talked about this in the previous show. There is no way to check all of those planets physically. Like, they're procedurally generated, so you don't know what is happening on those planets, and there's no way to physically check it and make sure that, you know, you don't have, you know, something super weird on one of those planets. So they have to build virtual, basically programs, robots that travel from, that go from planet to planet and check that, you know, you don't have some anomalies or too much of one thing of one color in one region or whatever, that kind of thing. It's a fascinating project. But are you part of the hype crowd for No Man's Sky?
Or? No. I don't like to get excited about things anymore, Patrick.
Jaded.
I'm jaded, exactly. So I'm interested to see where it goes, because I think it'd just be very interesting to see what that studio manages to make.
So you're probably part of the people who are going to be pleasantly surprised, and the rest of us are going to be horribly disappointed.
Exactly.
Star Wars Battlefront Alpha is live, and we have leaked footage.
Oh yeah, all over the place.
Did you look at the leaked footage? Or
I did. Yeah, no, I've seen it. It's stunning. It truly really? Is. For me, it looks like Star Wars. I cannot believe it, because the particle effects they've used, the sounds, the lasers.
Yeah, the sound work is incredible. Yeah.
It is. It looks like how I remember Star Wars being, not actually how it is, in that it's all HD. It all looks, you know, fantastically beautiful. The gameplay's fairly standard. You get, you know, it's like the things I've seen from there have been kind of capture the flag, control point style stuff.
Yeah, see, that's the thing that bothers me. It's the E3 demo, and we knew that even at the time, but it was so cinematic, it made it seem better than it would be. Mm. And the leaked actual gameplay footage makes it seem like, oh, this is an FPS or TPS or whatever it is.
Mm.
Oh, all right.
But well, I guess it's cool, but surely they're visually, you must be impressed, though. Like,
yeah,
have you
yeah.
like the canyons, the rocks, the fire. You shoot someone and sparks fly out, sort of thing, like in Star Wars. It just, I love that, and I think it's great. The old Battlefront games were fantastic. This one will be good. It's EA, so you know I'm not gonna do anything other than just cite it's EA. So don't expect it to be better than the franchise they bought. Just expect it to be kind of good as I look across the strewn bodies of all these fantastic game franchises that EA bought and then made another one that then was terrible.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is probably that I'm not a big, huge fan of those games. And I do enjoy some competitive games, but I do usually need to have a single player experience to get me hooked, or that's usually the way I go. But we'll see. I'm still intrigued by Battlefront. However, if you do want your Star Wars itch scratched at some point in the future, and you're probably going to be inundated with stuff between the movies and the there are so many announcements. Apparently, Nolan North, who is the voice of Nathan Drake and many other
every other game character you've ever heard.
Has been very chatty at I can't remember which con it was, but it was a convention and he was on the panel, and he's been spilling stuff like nobody else. It's like he must have gotten a call from Naughty Dog afterwards. They were like, what the hell are you thinking? He was talking about how the Uncharted 4 game was basically, the entire story was thrown out when Amy Hennig, who was basically the head for Uncharted 1, 2, and 3, when she departed, and when the Neil Druckmann people, the team, came on after having finished Last of Us, they basically threw everything out and restarted from the get-go. He also mentioned that Amy Hennig, who is a good friend of his, she's now working at Visceral's, and they're doing a Star Wars game, and he said it's going to be very similar. It's in the style of Uncharted. And that's what I wanted to get at. That's cool. Probably going to scratch my itches a lot better, because I love the Uncharted games. So that kind of directed, single-player, scripted, cinematic experience is probably going to be the thing I enjoy more than Battlefront. But
I think so. I think it's anything that plays around with character in the Star Wars universe is always fun. Knights of the Old Republic, Jedi Academy, you know, those games that had those strong characters running through them, they stand out in my head. You know, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter is a good game, but you know, Battlefront, good games, but you know, I would really enjoy playing a Star Wars game with some good story. The old Republic Online is got some great story in it. It's just ruined by some kind of bad MMO ing.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think this is the theme of the day. The directed gameplay experience is what I really enjoy, and if Star Wars is that. There was Star Wars 1313. I don't think this is the same project.
No, that was canned, though, wasn't it? When Disney bought it, they basically canned everything.
Yeah, so we'll see. Last thing that Nolan North said, he basically confirmed that Naughty Dog he basically announced The Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Which is, again, the kind of thing that, honestly, I think he's going to get a very serious to take.
He's untouchable. He's Nolan North. You know, he can make a game with some good voice in. Yeah, Nolan North. He's untouched.
But I still think he's going to get a good bollocking, as you would say.
He probably is. You know, he's probably violated a few contracts.
Yeah.
He probably is going to earn a bit less.
So anyway, The Last of Us 2. Did you play The Last of Us?
No. And it's
oh, my God. Yeah, exactly. Go so play I it right
no,
now.
Exactly. And I've gone all of the way to this point without having the story ruined for me in any way, okay. shape, or form. But I don't mind if you want to ruin it. I would
never. I'm okay. the anti-spoiler. Okay. The Last of Us is a flawed game in many ways, but a brilliant game in many other ways. Gameplay wise, there are you know, in Uncharted you have the combat, the traversal, and the the puzzle solving. In The Last of Us, they did away with the traversal, and basically there is very little puzzle solving. So the only thing you're left with is the combat, which is good. It's honestly very good. It's divided in two. There is stealth combat and active combat, you know. But the problem is there is no other gameplay loop. Everything else rests on the storytelling elements of the game, which are seriously very, very good. And it's too bad that anyone would not play it. If you enjoy the directed experiences, please go and play this game. It is definitely worth playing. One of my favorite games of the past generation, possibly the favorite game.
And they did a PS4 re-release, didn't they?
Right. There's a PS4 remastered edition that includes the DLC, which is also super excellent. And I don't want to ruin it, but okay, I'll talk about one element from the DLC. And you can do the DLC before you do the full game. It is a little bit spoilery, but it sort of intrigues you to find where this is going to take place in the full game. You could do that, and it's a 2-hour experience. So maybe you can try that as a, I think it was on PS Plus a couple of months ago, or maybe you can buy it individually now. But go and try that to see if you would like the game. It's definitely a cool experience. But one element of that DLC, and I'm going to spoil it for 5 minutes starting now, so you can advance 5 minutes and we'll be done. But it's not spoilery. It's just one cool gameplay thing.
Into the 5 minutes, but keep going.
Yes, I am. It's at some point the heroine comes to an arcade game, and she doesn't she dreams about playing video games, but obviously there is no power or the game is broken, and it's this game Angel Knives, which is I can't remember the name of the game, but the character is Angel Knives, and she wants to play it, but she can't. So her friend is like, oh, no, but you can play it. Go ahead, put your hands on the controls. And her friend starts telling her what happens in the game. And the screen locks on, Ellie. What's her name? Ellie, thank you.
No, I haven't even played it, but there you go.
So it zooms on Ellie's face, lit by the lights of the arcade. And her friend tells her what is happening, and you get the sound that changes and the light that dims and the story that, you know, what the combat that is being narrated that gets more and more exciting, and you have to press the right buttons at the right time with a timer. It's sort of a quick time event. But the way it's narrated and the way it's directed makes you feel like you're actually there with her, with Ellie, being so excited about what she's doing, and she feels almost like she has played this game. It is, again, gameplay-wise, narration-wise, an incredible moment. And this is very far from the idea you have of The Last of Us, which is, you know, sort of zombie-like post-apocalyptic game. But it's in those moments that it creates emotion that it's the most incredible. So play the game. It is incredible.
Cool.
Does it need a second episode? I don't know. It's a big question. I love the game. I really want it to be. I really want to have a second episode.
If you enjoy the world enough, then there's always.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's really a self-contained story.
But they could tell another story within that world, though, with different characters.
Yeah. And that's my the way I look at it. They could tell another story with different characters. They could tell another story with the same characters at a different time. Mm-hmm. Like if they remove it significantly from this time, I think there would be interesting elements there. But I don't know. Do old games need sequels?
Yes.
Okay. All
because
right.
Because any finite game, definitely. If it's a good game, I want to be able to play more of all good things. That's why, like, for example, Arkham Knight is bittersweet because it's the last Batman game that Rocksteady's going to make for the foreseeable future. And other people tackling it haven't done it as well. So it's that thing of once I 100% it, that's it. That's sad. And there's rumors that they might be making a Superman game. And
that's
then
what I want
them
to make.
Yeah. That's cool. But it's still one of those things where I'm just not too sure.
Yeah, it's so. But the thing is, that's like, you know, that that saying that everyone is incompetent in companies because you promote them until they're bad enough at their job that you can't promote them anymore. With the games, you keep making games until, you know, if they're good, you keep making more of them, and then they're bad. So you stop. So you make them until they're bad. Is that the fate we're destined to experience?
Yeah, you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. It's EA's business model. So I think, why not?
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, I think it's fine. The last one will be crappy, but I guess at least make it, if it's an excellent game, I want at least a couple or three, because the first one is sort of wetting your palate, and then you want to have you want more of that world. And The Last of Us, it's such incredible characters and such an incredible world that it would be too bad to just have worked so hard to create it and then leave it abandoned forever. So that's why I'm rooting for another episode. All right, I guess we're mostly done with the big stories. There was a surprising trailer for the zombie mode in Black Ops 3, which is this sort of film noir thing that actually was fun.
Good.
And I was like, wait, Black Ops 3, fun?
Well, it's the Treyarch one, isn't it? So they're always a little bit more zany and fun.
Yeah, I guess.
But I think the zombie mode, it's one of those things certain people will love. Other people, well, I think everyone who plays Blops will enjoy zombies.
Blops.
But yeah, it's one of those things. I don't know really how much they need to announce these things. Because there's no doubt that, you know, next year, I'll let you in on a little secret, there's going to be another Call of Duty.
No.
Yeah, I've got insider info. And the following year after that, there's going to be another Call of Duty.
No, but they do need to announce those things, because the zombie mode is, they have nothing differentiating those, you know, annual franchises. And this one is the only, you know, it's the thing that might interest some of the people that aren't interested in buying it every year. I'm thinking, you know, they might think, oh, well, this looks cool. It's a basically four-play-up co-op wave-based gameplay, right? So you get waves. It's a horde mode.
Like I said, the previous zombie modes have been amazing fun. It's just this one, again, looks very pretty, and it's going to be lots of good fun.
Yeah. Lizard Squad hacker was convicted to 2 years suspended prison sentence, and what's his face went ballistic. What's his name? Sony Daybreak.
Julius, what's his face?
No, John Smedley.
Oh, Smedley. Sorry.
He because he was the one that got his plane downed. Not downed, but, you know, there was a bomb threat, and so the plane couldn't, had to land, and because he was on it. And it was, Lizard Squad is obviously a bunch of idiots, but he was really angry, and he started tweeting that the young hacker will get what's coming to him. And apparently he has been swatted, or there have been swattings, and he has been threatened, and some of his data has been published online. And I understand that he's angry. I don't think threatening in that manner someone on Twitter is the best way to go about it. I understand
his frustration.
He's a nice guy,
but he's, yeah, I think he's just a little bit too close to this.
And Dragon Quest, there's going to be a basically Minecraft-like Dragon Quest. I'm not a big Dragon Quest fan. I think it's more for, you know,
Well, again,
Japanese public.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Minecraft, you know, has made so much money that everyone has tried and continues to try to make it. And I think they all fail to see the issue. It's the same thing with World of Warcraft, is people look and think, oh my gosh, look how much money Blizzard's making with World of Warcraft. We should make an MMO and then we'll make all that much money. And what they've got wrong is that it's not that, $2.5 billion of Minecraft revenues out there for grabs. That's how much less revenue there is because Minecraft exists. So if you make something, you're competing with this juggernaut and you will have to spend more than there is left available to do. And you can see it in the MMO world, you know, all of these massive IPs, huge game developers, good games, a lot of them, but they just haven't been able to compete against World of Warcraft because that market's already been captured and kind of diminished. So it's this strange thing. I, to be honest with you, it wasn't until I saw the new Lego MMO Minecraft style thing that I
Lego
thought,
Worlds, yeah.
Lego Worlds, yeah. That I thought, okay, maybe there could be something
another
that,
one, yeah.
You know, does this well. But it's it's interesting to see, you know, Dragon Quest. You know, I remember playing Dragon Quest way back when. I don't think I'll play this. I don't think that it's, but maybe it's, well, to attract that younger audience.
Maybe the younger audience. I mean, it's in Japan. It's incredibly popular. It's the most popular IP in video game there is, Dragon Quest. Minecraft is immensely popular in Japan as well. I think it will make money. The question is, if their goal is to make another Minecraft as big as Minecraft, I think they're misguided. But I don't think that's the plan. The plan is to make some money in the way that Lego Worlds is not going to replace Minecraft. It's going to take to capture some of that enthusiasm. And, you know, just like the Toys to Life, which is a ridiculous name, but, you know, there are more than one. I think there can be more than one in that thing as well, if you're specific enough that you touch on people's emotional attachment to some brands and characters. And Dragon Quest in Japan, at least, definitely has that. So I think they can make a little bit of money. But
You believe. Yeah. That's good.
And finally, PewDiePie is talking about the people who hate the fact that he's making so much money.
He is making a lot of money.
$7 million last
year.
That's
the reported amount. I expect it to be vastly above that as well.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I don't have a problem with it. I'm guessing most people don't have a problem with it. One of the things that people were hating on was they were saying, oh, he's just sitting on his ass and talking about video games in front of the camera, and he's making so much money, he doesn't deserve it. And so I think, first of all, of course, there's a lot of luck involved. He was there at the right time, the right person. He's pretty. He has like half of his audience is young girls that go crazy like they would for a boys band. It's also a lot of work. It's also a lot of talent because he does what he does well. He does it consistently. And you know what? It's what he said as well. You have a camera. YouTube is free to use for everyone. Yeah. Anyone can try
exactly.
their hand.
Wow.
So
throw the gauntlet down. I mean, obviously, you know, we exist in the same space as PewDie, and
who don't know, you work at Yogscast, which
I am
is
the CEO of Yogscast. So we are a YouTube business, much in the same way that Pewds is in and of himself, and he does have a team around him. He's worked very well and hard to maintain the
image,
intimacy, that perception of him being a single individual. He does have more people helping him, and I think he's, you know, encroaching on 10 billion views on YouTube alone, which is just phenomenal. He has 38 million subscribers. He is just a juggernaut. He does what he does better than anyone else, and people love him for it. We do different YouTube, and we have our own audience, and we're kind of happy with that. And I think you'll find, again, so many people have tried to do what PewDie does in the hopes of trying to get somewhere close to his fame and numbers. Markiplier actually is a good example of someone who kind of succeeded. He came along he was doing kind of just voice work and fun things along the way, and then started doing Let's Play in the style of PewDiePie, and now is sitting on 8.5 million subscribers and 2.5 billion views. You know, he's done very well, but people won't be as big as PewDie, similarly to kind of World of Warcraft and Minecraft. He deserves it. And I think it's one of those things where people don't necessarily understand this, but around 70% of purchase decisions made by people who watch YouTube, which is, I think, what was it, like a billion people or something ridiculous, can be attributed directly back to YouTube. So he is a massive, massive, massive marketing tool. I mean that tool in the nicest way. So the value that he presents to brands, to games, his amount of influence he has justifies in terms of the amount of game sales that he will make when he plays a game. So I think it's well-deserved revenue. And like I said, I'm sure he's earned vastly more than what the numbers kind of reported at. Hat off to him. Keep up the great work.
Yeah. I'm personally not a huge PewDiePie bro. How do they
call them? The bros. Yeah.
But I don't have a problem with these guys. If you want to have a problem with something in the industry, there are much bigger issues than the fact that PewDiePie is making a lot of money. Mm. So, anyway, on that note, I think we've reached the end of our show. Thank you so much for being on, Mr. Terpser.
Thank you very much for having me, Patrick. It's beautiful to talk games and with you in equal measures.
I've missed talking about games so much when I was at Blizzard.
I can imagine it being horrible. Knowing more about things that people are passionate about, but not being able to talk about it. I couldn't do it.
It wasn't even knowing more. It was just the fact that I couldn't say what I think about stuff publicly, like in the industry. It was terrifying.
I don't understand that. I can understand you not being allowed to say, like, guys, the next Hearthstone expansion is going to be hot. And then be like, Patrick, we are going to send out musical scrolls to people. You can't just tell people about the next Hearthstone expansion. But I think you should have been able to talk about games, and it's a shame you had to leave in order to do it.
Well, thank you.
But
I appreciate
our
your
win
support.
Is their loss.
Thank you. All right. Well, we will be back in a couple of weeks with another episode. Actually, from Nerdtacular, I think I might record it there. So we'll see if we can manage to do something with a few special guests.
I'm at Nerdtacular. I could do it with you.
That
but I've
would
done this
be
one.
Amazing. Well, we'll see. We'll see if, you know, depending on the numbers we get, the amount of revenue, the forecast for the next, you know, the target segment of marketing things, and we'll decide. But until then, I'm sure people know that they can where they can reach you. But tell us again, please.
I'm on Twitter. I'm the_T. So check me out there.
And don't you have a YouTube channel?
You can go to youtube.com/terps and you can watch me play Hearthstone 3 times a week where I just basically suck.
Excellent.
But that's the idea behind it.
I love it. That's
so
what
I did go 12 wins the other day in Arena. So, you know,
so your definition of suck is different from most people.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually
12
really,
wins,
really good.
You bastard.
I hate Paladin. You a little bit. I had like 3 Blessings of Kings, 2... No, like 4 true silvers and blessed champions as well. And
basically you cheated.
I basically had the most powerful deck you have could imagine.
But you know, it's not the size that counts. It's how
it's how you use it. And,
you used it well.
To my New Zealand fans say, they say, Terps, you've got a very powerful deck there. I really like the deck. And I say, thank you, New Zealand fans. It's very nice of you to comment on my deck.
Love it.
Yeah.
Excellent. For me, it's not Patrick on Twitter, and you can find this show and others on FrenchSpin.com. We do this every 2 weeks, and we will be back in 2 weeks with another show. Thank you very much for listening. See you then. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.